Are there roadblocks ahead for putting body cameras on local police? Good Thursday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9 and never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Also this morning, tune into the audio of the show on Facebook Live. It's on our First Coast Connect page. Just ahead, we will take your calls for FOP President Steve Zona on body cameras for the JSO. Where do you stand on that? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, a look at how the local program Money Minders helps people with disabilities mind their finances, plus some ideas for your weekend, all of that ahead. But first this hour, plans to put body cameras on Jacksonville police might have hit a potential roadblock as the sheriff and the head of the local police union are staking out opposing positions on how this program should be implemented. Now, JSO has been working on a pilot program for body cameras for over a year now. At the same time, local groups like the Southern Christian Leadership Conference say they want input on this initiative. All this after a string of controversial incidents around the country involving officer-involved shootings on civilians has increased pressure on police departments nationwide to consider the cameras to document interactions between their officers and people in their communities. It's a hot topic, and this morning we are discussing it as we welcome Steve Zona. He's president of the local Fraternal Order of Police. Steve, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Melissa, and thank you for the invitation.
And as we talk with the FOP president, here's our question to callers. Where do you stand on putting body cameras on local police officers as the JSO looks at this? We will go to your calls in a little bit at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or just send us an email, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweet at Melissa in Jax. You can also listen to the audio of this conversation right now on our First Coast Connect Facebook page as we stream the show live right there. And so you and Sheriff Williams, not on the same page about this. Where does the FOP stand on this issue?
I think we're closer than what people realize on this issue because the FOP does not oppose body cameras. Where we stand apart from the sheriff is in the city, they feel like body cameras are not a mandatory subject of collective bargaining, and we do.
And you feel that that should be done. And so you'll be taking an action later today on that?
Sure. I mean, rulings around the country have shown that policies and procedures as it relates to body-worn cameras are mandatory subjects of collective bargaining. Mm-hmm. And we have filed an unfair labor practice. It should be delivered to PERC, the body that oversees our disputes.
The Public Employees Relations Commission.
Correct. It should be delivered to them this morning. So we have filed that, and we'll let the process take its place.
Now, it's my understanding that agency has never taken a case over whether body camera policies should trigger a mandatory negotiation. Would this be a first?
This would be the first in the state of Florida.
Okay. And do you think that's likely? It looks as though that's the road we're headed down.
Sure. When you file these complaints with PERC, when they first get it, they look at it to make sure that our complaint is sufficient. And once they rule it's sufficient, the city and the sheriff's office will have a chance to respond, and it will go from there.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment for FOP President Steve Zona. We're talking about body cameras for law enforcement this morning at 549-2937. Sheriff Mike Williams has said JSO has been looking at a pilot program for some time. The new sheriff in Clay County, we spoke with him on the show recently, Daryl Daniels. He's looking at it for Clay County law enforcement in response to a string of controversial incidents all over the country. This has increasingly become a matter for law enforcement to at least consider. What do you see as the pros and cons of using body cameras?
Obviously, the pros, we support it. I think it's going to show I've been around for a long time, and, you know, when we were interviewing suspects who were arrested in crimes, we never video or audio recorded them, and people were screaming and yelling. We want that done because confessions are being beaten out of suspects in interview rooms, and we've started doing that, and the same confessions keep rolling in, and now the defense attorneys spend their entire time trying to suppress those confessions so they don't reach the courtroom. I see the same thing happening with body cameras. I mean, I truly believe the vast majority of police officers here in Jacksonville around the country do their job, and those body cameras are going to show that.
And at the same time, local groups such as the NAACP, the Jacksonville Urban League, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, they have demanded a meeting with the sheriff, and he's agreed to meet with them next Tuesday. The big three local civil rights organizations for African Americans, they want input on this process. What about that piece of it?
Sure. I've got no issue with that. That's, I mean, collective bargaining is between the unions and the city. And the sheriff's elected by the people here in Jacksonville, and that is their voice. They should go to the sheriff and voice their concerns about this program or any other policy the sheriff's office has. And then when we get to the table, the sheriff will bring those concerns in the form of his policy.
And, of course, for officers, having video of a controversial incident would bolster the officer's narrative of what happened. For civilians, they want the video so that they can prove what the, if they feel they were mistreated or even family members say their loved one was injured or killed, they have video to document that. There's nothing more powerful than video evidence.
Well, I mean, people need to realize this, and I've stressed this before in the past. A single video, whether it comes from a body camera, a cell phone, a stationary camera, that doesn't tell the whole story. Nothing replaces a thorough independent investigation. Mm-hmm. A camera is only one view of the whole entire thing. So people need to realize that, and this isn't going to be the cure-all for everything.
All right, lots of calls meanwhile. And if you're just tuning in, as we speak with Steve Zona, he's the president of the local FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police Union. What are your thoughts on body cameras as JSO looks at this? Pending negotiations and discussions. It's 549-2937. Let's begin with Dale in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Dale.
Yes, good morning. Well, you know, part of it is all about credibility. And you can lend a great deal of credibility to the officers by having body cameras. You know, and the transparency. As far as I'm concerned, you should have body cameras on all of the officers. It should all be there. I think it would help both with the community and them. But the concept of we don't have the budget and we don't have the authority or privacy, I think those are all just red herrings. The fact of the matter is that you walk into any convenience store, you're being videotaped. You go anywhere, you know, red light cameras, you're being videotaped. Everybody is being videotaped everywhere. Anybody who suggests that body cameras are too expensive, invasion of privacy, I'm sorry, that's BS. It's not a credible excuse for not having them on any officer.
All right, thanks, Dale. Sheriff Mike Williams has said privacy concerns are part of what JSO is looking at. What about the caller's point of view?
Sure. I mean, he's got some good points in there, but I mean, privacy, he says privacy is not an issue. I disagree. The terms and conditions of when you turn the body camera on and when you turn it off are very important to us. If we have to turn that body camera on the minute we get in the car and it stays on the whole time for our whole shift, our phone conversations with our wives, our children, our lawyer, our doctors, everybody else is recorded, and that's out there for everybody to see and people to review. Those are some of the issues we have. And again, we don't oppose body cameras. If the sheriff wants them on police officers in April, we want them there in March. We just want to make sure we're a part of this conversation in the way that Florida statutes dictate.
What types of boundaries or framework would the union ask for in terms of when the cameras are on and what types of interactions should be recorded? For example, the SCLC is demanding they're going to ask the sheriff for policies about recording, retention, and access, strict disciplinary protocols for what is recorded, making the footage readily available to the public and the press, just pushing for as much transparency as possible, prohibiting officers from viewing the footage before filing their reports, things like that. Where does the union stand on all of that?
Sure. I mean, there's all kind of issues that we have. I mean, they're not major, but some of those things that they mention in there are some of the things we're concerned about. I mean, like he says, don't view your video prior to writing a report. What's the reason for that? You want the truth, right? Nothing but the truth. So what's the problem with a police officer viewing his surveillance video prior to writing his report? There's cameras, stationary cameras in DUI cars that record audio and video of an arrest, and they review those prior to writing the report. What's the difference of a body camera? If all we want is the truth, what's the problem?
What would the union say is permissible to record and not to record? When would the cameras go on?
I don't know what the sheriff's office policy is going to be. I don't think on those issues, on when to record, when not to record, I don't think we'll be too far apart.
Because you're saying you don't want to record your whole shift. You don't want documented evidence of you on the phone with your wife or your kids or whatever goes on in the cruiser, you know, during the times when you're not interacting with the public.
Sure, sure. I mean, whatever the policy is that the sheriff comes up with, and it's going to have on and off, it's going to most likely center around when we have contact with people and what type of contact that is, on whether or not the turning the camera on and off is necessary. Once he comes up with that policy, then we'll look at it. And like I said, he may put that policy on the table and it'll be the best thing to slice bread and we won't have any issues with it.
All right. And lots of calls. Email. We'll go to your emails in a moment for FOP President Steve Zona, too. It's 549-2937 to join the conversation right now. Johnny in Washington Heights. Hey, Johnny. Good morning.
Good morning. I think it's great that that they're bringing the cameras, but it doesn't matter whether the camera was a dash cam in the interview room. We see time and time again, once the evidence makes it to trial, that the cops end up getting off anyways. And I think that's more the problem than capturing more video. And that was my thought.
Okay, thanks for that call. What about that perception that civilians, even if they feel they have a case, that they're not going to see justice? And well, I realize that that goes both ways, that police officers have a very different perspective on this. But what about his call?
Well, I mean, he's commenting on what happens in the court system, and that's kind of out of our control. And believe it or not, police officers have rights just like the average citizen does. And if a police officer is arrested or charged with a crime like we just saw it in Baltimore, and they went to trial and they were found not guilty, you can call that getting off, and I might call it justice.
So you would disagree then with the perception that juries are very reluctant to convict law enforcement officers of these types of crimes, even if there's video evidence. For example, I'll give you one example. The officer in South Carolina who was not convicted, even though there was video evidence of him tasering someone who was running away, and then you saw him on the video go up and sort of stage the scene to make it look more favorable to his narrative of what took place.
If I'd have known we were going to talk about that case, I would have researched it prior to being. So I don't know what you're talking about on that particular case, but I mean, they're dealt with by a case-by-case basis, and you have to, people have to realize that you're investigated by your agency, potentially the FBI, the Justice Department, the prosecutor's office. So I don't know how it went in South Carolina. Obviously, more than one agency looked at that. Like I said, there's more to it than just a video. So you got to do an independent, thorough investigation. That's going to lead you to the outcome and the conclusion. And evidently, it did in that case. I don't know that much about that case.
And then on the other hand, clearly, officers feel as though they're under siege in terms of public opinion and criticism when they go out to do very difficult and often dangerous work. That the emotions around this debate are factoring into how to implement body cameras across the country.
Sure. I mean, but I think you can ask the average police officer here in Jacksonville. We truly do believe that the community supports us. There's, you know, pockets here and there that don't, but it's going to be a change for law enforcement when the body cameras come. But, you know, we signed up to do this job, and we're willing to accept that.
All right. Let's take a few more calls for Steve Zona of the FOP. Kelly in Arlington. Hey, Kelly. Go ahead.
Hi. I had 2 points. Actually, first I want to say that I do support officers' work, and I really appreciate the risk they take. I'm a new mother, and so that's really near and dear to my heart. But I also want to say that I think that why not have body cameras? I think if it can provide transparency, like a previous caller was saying, and also why reinvent the wheel? Why not go to other cities that are doing this and find out how they're protecting officers' privacy and things like that?
Okay, thanks, Kelly. Is that something that's being looked at here in Jacksonville, looking to other cities to see how they've worked through all this?
Sure, sure. The FOP is doing that. I mean, we're doing it on our side. We've gathered policies from around the country and around Florida, and I can tell you the sheriff's office is doing that also. It just depends on the policy they bring to the table, and I just want to make a quick point. In agreeing with all these callers to get that point out there. Again, the FOP doesn't oppose body cameras.
Right. Lots of emails for you, too. Let's go to a couple of them. Here's one from Ryan. Everyone should be in favor of this. It will justify lawful officers' actions, provide evidence against any corrupt or violent officers, and provide undeniable evidence for those who wish to press press charges. Here is another email from Erica. I have lived in Jacksonville for almost 15 years. I think body cameras are a good idea. However, this can only work if the entirety of the police force is transparent with release of the video. These cameras will help officers as well as civilians. Let's go to Julia in Chimney Lakes. Hey, Julia. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hi. Well, in regard to the body cameras, I feel like it would really protect the officers as well if they were to be assaulted or if things were to escalate and they didn't have the appropriate backup. You know, they would have that on camera and know who the perpetrator was and could more easily find that individual. And also, when an officer is at work, I don't, you know, they're there to serve the public, and I'm just concerned with the mention of the officer's privacy and the body cameras. You really shouldn't be on the phone with your wife and your lawyer for any kind of extended period of time when you're there to be serving the community. So as far as officer privacy in that regard, that's a little baffling to me. I don't get to make personal phone calls at work.
So. Okay. Thanks, Julia.
Well, I appreciate her position, but I think what she's saying is unrealistic. If your spouse or loved one called you, and you would answer the phone and you would speak to them. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Here's a tweet for you from David. Regarding the review of camera footage before writing up a police report, are police okay with the suspects reviewing the body camera footage prior to an interview? So meaning that if you're allowed to view footage before filing a report, could the person who's on the other end of that interaction, will they get access
to it? There's a big difference there because police officers, when we are involved in an incident or whatever it is, we don't have a choice but to write a report. We have to write the report. We have to testify in internal affairs. We have to testify before a response to resistance. The perpetrator, as he describes it, has a choice. He can tell us, I don't want to talk. I want a lawyer. And then the lawyer will get access to that video. They can watch that video. Then they can make a determination if they want to talk or not. So there's a process in place for the perpetrator to get a copy of that and view it prior to talking. So, yeah, I'm opposed to that. No, they don't get it.
Lots of discussion about body cameras with FOP President Steve Zona on the show this morning. Later today, the local Fraternal Order of Police will send a complaint to the Public Employees Relations Commission. That's the state agency that settles union disputes. The FOP wants this body camera discussion to be part of broader negotiations with the city over its collective bargaining contract. Ricky in Orange Park. Hi, Ricky.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Good, good, good. Yeah, my thought was, you know, in concern to the privacy of the officers while they're in the cruiser, I drive a 2014 Dodge Charger. As soon as I get out of my car knows my key's not in that car. Couldn't that technology be reversed so that when that officer gets out of that car, that camera comes on?
Thanks for that question.
I don't know if that technology exists or not, but again, I mean, that would be something we would talk about with the sheriff if it was available.
Yeah. And you know what? That's a good question. The next time we do this topic, I'll try to get an answer to whether that is possible. Ben in Mandarin. Hi, Ben. Hey, Ben, go ahead. Okay, Ben, give us a call back. A few more calls for the FOP's Steve Zona. Chris in Arlington. Hello, Chris. Good morning to you.
Hi. I just wanted to make a point about the privacy issue that some people aren't regarding. Just because a police officer is on duty doesn't mean that he's not handling telephone calls from attorneys about cases that he's dealing with that don't need to be recorded. Doesn't mean he doesn't have to use the restroom that doesn't need to be recorded. Doesn't mean that he doesn't have lunch breaks and coffee breaks that don't need to be recorded. So there are a lot of privacy issues regarding the use of the camera that do need to be addressed. I'm all for body cameras. I think they're a great idea. But I think that people think that when people take a job in public service, they give up all their rights to privacy, and that's just not the case.
Okay. Thanks for that call.
I mean, that's a point I made earlier. I appreciate that call. Just because we're police officers, we have, you know, basically the same rights as every other citizen out there does. And I mean, think about this, the privacy issue. How many times have you come to work, had a bad day, been mad at your boss, went into the bathroom with a coworker and said things about your boss you don't want your boss to hear? Those are issues.
Never.
Those are issues that we need to be concerned about. Those types of conversations shouldn't be recorded.
Lots of comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page about body cameras for police. We are streaming the audio live on Facebook right now. Austin writes the show, what's the procedural idea behind this? Is it that they turn on the camera as soon as they enter the car or after they pull someone over? People seem to want to know. And we don't really know the answer to that yet.
We don't know. We don't know what the sheriff's office is going to put on the table as a potential policy.
Yeah, you have to wait and see. Ben in Mandarin is back. Hi, Ben. Thanks for calling back.
Hey, sorry about that.
That's all right.
My question is, I understand that police officers have a bit of like discretion, like maybe they want to just give like a warning to someone who they pull over, or maybe they like find a couple of like troublesome kids and just take them home to their parents. If they have body cameras, would those police officers then be required to like charge anyone they want to like find, or are they like, can they not give warnings at that point because they have like evidence that they did pull them over? Thank you, Ben.
No, Ben, the sheriff's office policy gives wide discretion to police officers on when to arrest, when not to arrest, in certain circumstances, and when they can and can't write tickets.
Lots of calls from Mandarin, by the way, today. They're very interested in speaking with you, Steve. Joe in Mandarin. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, my question is related to the collective bargaining process. It's the presentation that even the pilot program starts a round of collective bargaining, and my concern is that there are going to be other issues brought up in that collective bargaining that are not related to the use of the body cameras.
Yeah, how about that?
Well, I mean, fortunately for us, there are other issues brought up during collective bargaining. I mean, the courts have held that Chapter 447, which covers collective bargaining, needs to be interpreted in a very broad scope, and the reason for that is there's no binding arbitration here in Florida. There's no picketing by police officers. It's a way to balance the playing field between employee organizations and the city. So you're right. I mean, all the conditions of our wages, working conditions, discipline, demotion, all those types of things are mandatory subjects of collective bargaining. Now, we're not trying to slow down the process of body cameras. Like I said, if the sheriff wants them out in April, we want them out in March. We want to help them get there. But if we waive our right to collective bargaining, we can never come back and get that forever and ever. If we waive that right, we might get along well with Sheriff Williams. Two sheriffs down the road, we might not get along well, and he might want to change the policy in a way that it hurts our officers. We can't go back and get that right to collective bargaining back.
Derek in Mandarin. Hey, Derek, what's your question?
Hey, just a comment, really. I think that eventually, these body cameras should be public domain. They should be somehow accessible online to the general public, because I think we're getting too far off the point that these officers are public servants. I mean, they are. When I was a correctional officer, I didn't have the ability to call my wife or kids. You know, when I was at work, I did my 8 hours and then I hit the gate. And now, the way I understand it, they're doing 12-hour shifts there. So, you know, these are public servants. I think they need to serve the public, and I think that that the public should have access to these video cameras. And obviously, when you go to use a restroom and things like that, it's going to have to be turned off, obviously.
All right. Thanks for the call. Lots of callers on this one. So as you mentioned a moment ago, your complaint is dropping at the PERC's office. That's the Public Employees Relations Commission. Later on this morning, as you try to work through collective bargaining with the city. Where does this go from here? When can we maybe hope to hear some news about how this is proceeding?
Well, if PERC finds that it's sufficient, then they give the city an opportunity to respond. They've got 20 days to respond. They respond. A hearing officer is chosen. We schedule a hearing. Then the hearing officer has his timeline. I think it's 45 days off the top of my head to make a decision and make a recommendation to PERC. So, I mean, the PERC process shouldn't take several months. I mean, and then depending on the ruling, you know, you always have the right to appeal it to circuit court.
So this could be going on for some time.
It could. It could drag out for a year.
At the same time, Sheriff Mike Williams is meeting next week with a group of local civil rights organizations on this topic of body cameras. We'll continue to follow the story here on the show and on 89.9 News. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your perspective on this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve Zona is president of the local Fraternal Order of Police. Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, we've got The Spectator and plenty of ideas for your weekend. A very busy weekend out there. But up next, how the local program Money Minders prevents poverty for people with disabilities. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. On the next 1A, President Trump says the claims about Russia and his administration are nonsense. But members of his own party say they'll decide what's real.
Congress is not fake.
The latest on the Michael Flynn fallout as calls grow for an independent investigation into what might connect the White House to the Kremlin.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Joey Petty works in shipyards, which can be dangerous work.
But that's what you gotta do to feed your family in this corner of the world.
Some days are more dangerous than others.
As I was stepping on the boat, it just a boom, boom, boom. Three big flashes, explosions.
The companies that build the Navy's fleet on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross.
Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back. Well, thousands of local residents have a disability that can make it difficult for them to do a lot of things, including managing their money. When they miss bills like utilities or rent, it can be the beginning of disaster and even start the cycle of homelessness. Now, this hidden link between disability and poverty is the focus of Money Minders. That's a program of Lutheran Social Services, and we're going to put the spotlight on it right now as we welcome Melody Perry of LSS. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Nakia Hinton. She's the parent and caregiver of a young Money Minders client. Good morning.
Good morning.
In a moment, we'll hear Nakia's family story, but first, Melody, you know, people without a disability have a hard time managing their finances. But if you have a disability, a mental illness, substance abuse problem, you name it, this can be a crippling issue for so many people. So that's where Money Minders comes in.
Yes, it is.
How does it work?
Our Money Minders program has been around now at Lutheran Social Services for the last 25 years.
Oh, long time.
Absolutely. We have now served over 750 clients currently, and we are set up to pay our clients' bills on a monthly basis by way of counseling and budgeting.
Right. So according to the U.S. Census Bureau, if you have a disability, you're twice as likely to live in poverty or become homeless. This is especially true in an urban area like Jacksonville. So when you go in and you help set up budgets and bill pay for people, this takes this off their plate. Tell me a little bit about how you help.
Once we receive the client's monthly payments, we set them up on a budget to fit their incoming needs as far as their rent and their utilities, whatever they receive on a monthly basis, and also for them to have some pocket change. They need money as well to spend for themselves.
Sure.
We govern those funds as normal on a monthly basis, and we enjoy doing that as well.
Now, Nakia Hinton, you're a parent and a caregiver. How did Money Minders come into your family's life?
We met Melody around about 2012. And my daughter, she has a disability of a heart, congenital condition. Uh-huh. So when we met her, she made it more comfortable for us, and she is actually good at our concerns and our needs.
And so what are some of your daughter's challenges that Money Minders helps out with?
They help with her needs as far as monthly needs, anything as far as her medicine, our rent, our utilities, things like that.
You just help me make sure all those bills get paid because
yes, ma'am.
She's not able to take care of it herself.
No.
How much worry does that take off your plate?
It takes a lot of stress off me. I have six kids at home, and her being one with her condition, that they make it easier for me.
Sure. And anyone who's a caregiver like Nakia, this is what keeps people up at night.
Absolutely.
You know, this fear. And also sometimes for senior citizens, people who are maybe dealing with Alzheimer's or dementia.
Yes.
In my own extended family, we've had trouble with that. Someone who is dealing with that, paying bills twice, not paying them, forgetting to pay them at all, or double paying them.
Absolutely.
That's pretty common, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
How do you help with that, particularly with someone, you know, maybe they don't want to relinquish control of their bill paying, but they might need to?
Well,
and I have very close family experience with this, so I'm curious to hear, how do you help with that?
Absolutely. Once they come into our office and sit down, we will talk to them and show them the benefits to having us as representative payees in this Money Minders program. We will show them that on a monthly basis, your lights will never get cut off and your rent will always be paid, so you'll have mm-hmm. shelter.
Now, you're the only program in Northeast Florida that helps people manage their Social Security checks as well.
Absolutely.
So that's important. You're helping hundreds of people each month, but of course, you want to get the word out about Money Minders.
Yes.
It's lssjax.org, because I'm sure there are so many people that could use this and just haven't heard about it, even Absolutely. Though you've been around, as you said, for 25 years.
Yes.
lssjax.org. Get your loved one who needs this service in touch with Money Minders of Lutheran Social Services. It's free.
It's free. We have free services. Our monthly service fee is $41.
Almost it
is
free. It's almost free.
Almost free.
I stand corrected.
Yes, $41 fee for service.
All right. Melody Perry of LSS, Nakia Hinton, she's a client of Money Minders. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Again, that's lssjax.org. And in a moment, big news from the local Five and Dime Theater, plus The Spectator. Keep listening.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Mahershala Ali, who's nominated for an Oscar as Best Supporting Actor for his role in Moonlight, as a drug dealer who becomes the father figure to a young boy. Moonlight is nominated for Best Picture, and so is another film Ali co-stars in, Hidden Figures. He gave a very moving speech when accepting a Golden Globe last month for his performance in Moonlight. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Christian McBride. Next time on Jazz Night in America, birthers, truthers, reptilians. Oh, my. D'Arcy James Argue takes on the history of conspiracy theories with his jazz suite, Real Enemies.
We are living in a very paranoid time. We are all susceptible to it.
Tune in on Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Jazz, the Great American Songbook, and your favorite oldies on Relax Radio at midnight, only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world.
Our love is here to stay.
Well, the Five and Dime Theater is busting out this month with a new production, and also, big news, drum roll please, a new downtown location. They finally have a home downtown.
Five and Dime Executive Director Lee Hamby is here now with all the big news. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
You're joining us in the urban core of Jacksonville.
Yes. I just had to come down the street about 5 seconds.
That's right.
It's awesome.
Come hang out anytime. Now, where is the Five and Dime now located?
We are at 112 East Adams Street. If anybody remembers where the Borough Bar or where London Bridge used to be, we're right in that same strip, or where Chomp Chomp was, mm-hmm. in that same strip.
And how did you settle on that location?
We, Elias Hyanides came to us and said they had a location. He's a good friend. He's also an actor and a real estate person. Came to us and said that this building was coming available. I knew the building because it had been quite a few things over the years. And without really looking at it, I knew it was perfect for us.
Great. Because over the years, the Five and Dime Theater has sort of moved around town with lots of different venues for its local theater productions.
Everywhere, really.
Yeah.
We've been here at WJCT Studios,
right.
Underbelly, The Comer for about 5 years, actually. Church of the Good Shepherd, everywhere, really.
What does it mean then to have a permanent home?
I don't think anybody realizes how special it is to be able to put something into a filing cabinet that is in your office, or put away, you know, the tools that we use to build sets in the place that they should go. Just the little stuff is what's amazing. Just being able to build stuff on site and have rehearsals on site.
Was it important to you also to be downtown?
It was. Our mission is to serve the urban core, so it was very important.
It
just feels so good to be there and have all the love and support that we've gotten so far. It's been really amazing.
You've done some incredible productions. You've got a new one coming up this weekend.
Tomorrow night.
Night Mother. Tell us about it.
Night Mother is a 1983 Pulitzer Prize winner winning play by Marsha Norman. It was then made into a movie in 1986 starring Sissy Spacek and who was the other actress? Anne Bancroft. And it is a wonderful...
I cannot think of her without thinking of The Graduate, of course. She had an incredible career.
She did. I still have a weird thing about her with this movie because she's such a New Yorker to me.
Uh-huh.
And she plays like a Southern woman in the movie. So it's a weird disconnect to me. But she was really good, actually.
Uh-huh.
The script is just a beautiful script. It's not the most lively of stories. I won't give that away if you don't know it. But it is just a beautiful script, and I hope people come out and see the wonderful work that's being put into it.
And they can see the new theater.
And they can see the new theater space.
How did you refit it to make it into a theater?
Well, we're still in the process of doing that. Some things that we thought could be done within a short period of time have been taking longer than expected. Like, we have these columns in the theater space that we really want to remove. And that's why I started a fundraising campaign on Facebook that I'm very proud to say did very well.
How much did you raise?
We raised about $15,000.
On Facebook. You go, Lee Hamby.
I'm flabbergasted and overwhelmed by the people's support. It's just amazing.
I'm going to start a Facebook campaign.
You should.
I have
to do it for a nonprofit, though.
Of course.
So it can't go in.
Well, we already do, right here at WJCT.
Yeah.
But wow, that was pretty easy, huh?
Yeah, I started with $5,000, actually. And within 24 hours... that happened. And so I didn't want to sound stingy, but I raised it to 10,000 and then I raised it to 12,500 and then it went up to about 15.
And people donated right through Facebook.
Right through Facebook. It goes through a nonprofit donor, mm-hmm. Some kind of nonprofit, but it is through Facebook. Yeah.
Wow. We need to take a leaf out of your book, don't we, right here at 89.9.
In
the meantime, go see the new production of Night Mother at the new Five and Dime Theater location on West Adams Street.
East Adams Street.
Pardon me.
Yes.
I knew that. On East Adams Street in downtown Jacksonville. They debut tomorrow night, and it runs for how many weeks?
Three weekends, March 5th.
All right. You're doing amazing things. Lee Hamby,
thank you.
Thanks for being here. Will you stick around while we talk about weekend events?
I would love to.
Okay.
Thanks.
The Spectator's up next. We'll be right back.
Moving to the rock and sound.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we are not afraid to ask the big questions, even to the guy who owns the Chicago Cubs.
Well, there's a few people that just misunderstand something about, like, why beer costs $9 or something like that.
Why does beer cost $9?
Why does a starting pitcher cost $25?
We're worth what you pay for us, which is nothing. Join us for the News Quiz from NPR. Saturday and Sunday mornings on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross.
Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Today's segment with Carrie Speckman is brought to you in part by Blue Bamboo Asian Kitchen.
Welcome back. Well, from Sweet Honey in the Rock to Jersey Boys and more. Finally, this hour, lots of ideas for your weekend. Here as she is every Thursday to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, thespectator.com's Carrie Speckman.
Yay! Today. I should have, when I, you know how I do my little dance every time I come in there, I feel like I should have flown in on a wire like Lady Gaga.
Oh, man. What, the best opening ever. Jumping off the roof.
I know.
I love
catching
it.
Catching a ball. That was...
Yeah, oh, yeah, she too? Caught the football at the end and spiked it. Yeah.
Get it, girl.
She did.
Get it,
Pretty
Gaga.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right, from Lady Gaga to Three Dog Night, two very different musical acts.
And America. Don't forget.
Yeah, tell us about
it's Three Dog Night and America.
Coming to town.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and just tell you some of their songs so you don't have to look it up on the Google. You've got your Three Dog Night, Joy to the World. We all know that one.
By the way, do you know the origin of the meaning of the phrase Three Dog Night?
I have a feeling I'm going to find out in about 2 seconds.
It stems from either the Eskimos or another population that was cold all the time. A three dog night is a really cold night.
Huh.
They call all the dogs into bed with them. Yeah, so you don't freeze to death.
I have a two cat night every night. Hot, cold, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Okay, so it's tonight at the Florida Theater.
And then you have America.
Three Dog
Horse
Night
with No Name.
And America at the Florida Theater tonight.
Tonight.
Okay, Friday night it's the River City Music Festival. Oh, some good acts coming to the arena.
Keith Sweat. That's the way he says it on the radio.
The you have to say it that way.
The Sweat Hotel. JoJo, 112, and next, the arena.
Okay, all coming to the arena. Now, I also need to make quick mention of another concert tonight. The amazing group Sweet Honey in the Rock performs tonight at the Ritz Theater.
Mm.
The renowned all-female, all-African-American group of singers makes incredible music, and they have a strong focus on social justice. Let's take a listen to the music and also singer Carol Mayard.
We want to really address some of the issues that are happening worldwide, address things that people are feeling and thinking through our music. The subject matter is love, but even I think if you're being very passionate about what you feel the right way to go should be, that still is another act of love.
That's Sweet Honey in the Rock. They are at the Ritz tonight. You can still get tickets at RitzJacksonville.com. Very cool.
I gotta say, the Ritz is really kicking it.
They have up their game big time.
I have a Ritz on here. And I actually just went to the amateur night a couple weeks ago. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Oh, it's such a great venue. Go to RitzJacksonville.com. Amazing talent coming through there. Now, Okay. Oh, the auto show is this weekend.
It is. The International Auto Show, I believe you
Thank you very much.
It is the premier showcase of the newest model year import and domestic vehicles, cars, vans, crossovers, hybrids, light trucks, and sport utilities.
Sunday. No, it's it's Friday through Sunday.
Yes.
At the Prime Osborne Convention
it's
Center.
Saturday.
Okay. Oh, by the way,
speaking of gigantic vehicles.
The Monster Jam is in town.
And it's did you call it a show? I don't know. Is it a show? An event?
I have a problem with calling it a show.
Yeah, I do too, but two times. It's usually they usually only have Saturday, but now they're doing Saturday
night. The Gravedigger's coming, though, both days.
Yes, and Sunday.
So you know that's going to be
And I didn't know this. In this group, there are two female drivers.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not up on... This is really not my area of expertise. Yeah, they have...
You don't
also
have front row tickets to the Monster Jam?
No.
Shocking.
I'm surprised.
Raisin Kane will be there. El Toro Loco.
This thing is always very popular.
And very loud, and I would recommend bringing earplugs.
When they bring the Gravedigger out, we always see it from right here across the street.
Oh, yes, that's true. They're all, yeah.
Yeah, it's Saturday and Sunday, the Monster Jam at Everbank Field. Oh, and Saturday night, we had them on the show last week. Saturday night, it's Friday Musicale, Sip, Sup, and Swing with the Chris Thomas Band. Mm. This is going to be a lot of fun.
It is. Also, Chris Thomas, hardest working man in show business.
He is.
No offense, Lee Hamby.
No, I give it to him. He's everywhere.
Give it up for Chris Thomas.
Yeah, every day he's doing something.
He is everywhere.
It's almost as though he's cloned himself.
Yes.
I see multiple variations of him at many, many
he's
events.
Everywhere.
All over the place.
He is everywhere.
He will be performing at Friday Musicale. This is their big fundraiser. If you've never been over there, check it out. It's an incredible venue. It's one of the oldest in town, too. They've been hosting concerts there for about 300 years. No, actually, it's 125 years.
Almost.
For 5,000 years.
Yeah, okay, so that's happening. And I want to make mention of the Greek festival coming back to town.
Oh, yes.
They're back on at the Morocco Shrine. That's on St. John's Bluff Road, Friday through Sunday. And if you love Greek food, Greek desserts, if you want some ouzo, they're going to have it all. Here's festival spokeswoman Maria Chrysavergis.
Melissa, it's just so much fun because I think what people love about us Greeks is that we're all about having a good time. We're all about feeding people. We have all of the populars, the favorites, the gyros, the chicken and the pork souvlaki, the spanakopita, which is the spinach pies, and the tiropides, which are the cheese pies and the grape leaves. And then we've got a whole other section where we've got a ton of our Greek bakery baked goods.
They've got, and they're going to have music.
Baklava.
Of course.
I just had to throw that in. That was the
Of course. So that's Friday through Sunday, jacksgreekfest.com. I just had to throw that in there.
Yes. I'm glad you did.
Okay.
I'm glad you did. We have the Amelia Island Book Festival. Actually, the kickoff is today, but it's sold out. So we'll just pretend it's tomorrow and Saturday.
Yeah. That is hugely popular. Incredible best-selling authors, Steve Barry, R.L. Stein.
Mary Kay Andrews. They've got some.
Yeah.
David Baldacci.
Yeah.
They've got some.
New York Times bestsellers galore.
Yeah. So they have book signings, workshops, a gala. And it will be in various locations throughout Amelia Island.
Okay. Cupid's Undie Run, Saturday at Finn McCool's Irish Pub and Restaurant. What is Cupid's Undie Run?
It will be...
And they're going to run in their undies?
In their undies.
Very
really?
Nice.
It's a little nippy for that.
Depends.
And, well, when you're running, and Valentine, you get off. Is it in regard to Valentine's Day, Cupid's Undie Run?
I guess so.
We're not sure. Okay.
That's the one I just said when the other lady was talking that I don't know anything about it,
okay.
So don't mention it. That's
okay. Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. You told me not to mention that. Well, we mentioned it anyway. Okay. And then last but not least, the incredible award-winning Jersey Boys is in town only through Sunday at the Times Union Center. I spoke about the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons with cast member Thomas Fasella.
They didn't know this story before the play happened, so it garners a response that includes both, you know, surprise and delight and shock and a lot of great memories come out of it. So it's been really fun to share it with people across the country.
I have been lucky enough to see Jersey Boys. It is so much fun. I really love this show. Get your tickets. It's only through Sunday. FSCJArtistSeries.org. You've seen it, Lee,
right? I saw it the other night. I saw it Tuesday night when they got here. My friend Matthew Daly's in it, and it's One of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, great Broadway
Write that
production.
Down. That's a quote.
It's serious. It's really
Hamby.
Good.
And Woody Hamby says, one of my favorites of all time.
It's just entertaining. And the talent, those guys singing, and it's just amazing.
And don't bring really young children. There are a few adult references. Yeah, yes. You could bring your older children, and they're really going to...
It's up, I think.
Yeah, they're going to love the music, because the music is timeless.
In my whole head, I keep singing Big Girls Don't Cry. I'm not going to sing it out loud, but it's just in my head.
You could be like the woman that sat next to me and sang Full Blast.
Oh. All throughout the
and
show.
And then I moved to the box seat and then got in trouble moving to the box seat and got kicked out.
Really?
I did.
You
yeah.
got kicked out of Jersey Boy. You buried the
Not
lead.
Out of the...
Kicked I just back
had
to your seat.
Yeah, had to kick back to a regular seat.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're still within the
you
bounds
are trouble.
Of decorum.
You are trouble, Lee Hamby. Yes. I knew it.
All right. We're going to close with a little music from Jersey Boys as we thank Lee Hamby and Carrie Speckman. Go to thespectator.com for some ideas for your weekend. That is our show today. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Go see something fun this weekend. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you soon. Special time for me. I remember what a night.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.